Hi, this is Christopher O'Reilly, host of From the Top. Thank you for tuning into this week's podcast. While this podcast is free for all of you, it actually costs our little nonprofit some significant resources to purchase rights for all this fabulous music. Please consider making a small gift to From the Top and keep us broadcasting loud and clear. Go to fromthetop.org and click on Support.
The great piano showman of history, Mozart, Beethoven, Liszt, Jerry Lee Lewis. On today's program, we'll meet a 14-year-old pianist who'd like to add his name to that list. From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. We're at Carnegie Music Hall in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where we'll also hear teenagers from the Philadelphia area perform from Schubert's monumental Death and the Maiden Quartet. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. Here's our host, the great concert pianist, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thank you and welcome, everybody. A special thanks to the Carnegie Mellon University School of Music for bringing us back to Pittsburgh. The School of Music is celebrating its 100th anniversary of offering top-notch musical instruction in one of the most magnificent buildings you can imagine, built in the opulent Beaux-Arts style that dominates the CMU campus. Of course, Pittsburgh has a long tradition of impressive architecture, great music-making, and venerable cultural institutions, the Carnegie Music Hall, not least among them. We've had Sir Edward Elgar conducting here, Gustav Mahler conducted here. Appropriate to our program later in the evening, Béla Bartók made the Carnegie Music Hall one of his first stops on arrival in the U.S. Of course, Heinz Hall is the great home of the Pittsburgh Symphony. That happened to be the occasion of my first concerto appearance with orchestra, so I remember that fondly. And of course, Pittsburgh is the home of WQED-FM, the cultural station that my late stepfather Jack Summers founded. QED was also the place in the TV side of things where you could find Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. That's where the show was shot. And so I remember when I lived here in Pittsburgh, I was finishing up high school and got to know Fred Rogers and his wonderful pianist wife, Joanne. As a matter of fact, we didn't have a grand piano in our house, and so Fred and Joanne had two beautiful concert grands that they had nestled in their living room next to each other so they could play duets. No mean pianist, Fred Rogers himself. Actually, when we started From the Top, Fred was one of the first interviews we did on From the Top. So a real fond memory for me. And that's the kind of nostalgia that the first piece of music on today's show evokes. And to play it, please welcome from the town of Dublin, Ohio, just outside of Columbus, 17-year-old euphonium player Grant Jameson. Grant, great to have you with us. What piece of music was I referring to? It's got a beautiful romantic title.
It's called Believe Me If All Those Endearing Young Charms by Mantilla.
Oh, very sincere and touching title. And this is an arrangement for that instrument you're holding. Explain what it is you play.
I play the euphonium.
It's so nice to have an instrument that actually has beauty as part of its name, you know. So before we hear this piece, could you describe the euphonium? It looks kind of like a compact tuba. I guess it's a lot of people confuse it with the baritone horn. What's the difference, would you say?
Yeah, the difference between the euphonium and the baritone is really the sound is a lot different. The sound of the baritone is a little bit more brilliant, I guess. It has a little bit more edge to it, and it actually is, the baritone is actually physically a little bit smaller than the euphonium. So I play the euphonium and not the baritone, so
you go.
If you ever get it confused.
All right, we've got our plumbing straight now. Now that we've got that, let's take this from the top.
Thank you.
Jameson, 17-year-old euphonium player from Dublin, Ohio. Grant, I just love the sound you get on the euphonium, and no doubt this hall has a little bit to do with it, but I've heard you in other rooms, and I can say for the most part it's... Gosh, the sound is, well, brass music is really in your blood. I mean, you've got a whole family of brass musicians
and a
whole lineage. So your dad, for instance, he's a...
Yeah, my dad is actually a trumpet player, and he's actually a conductor. He's been a conductor ever since, actually, I've been born, ever since I can remember. He's been, he conducted wind bands for a long time, and he's now is a conductor of brass bands around the Central Ohio area.
Mm-hmm. Are you actually in one of his bands? Yes.
Yeah, I'm in the Dublin Silver Band with him, yeah.
And your brother is in there too? What does he play?
Yeah, he's actually a trombone player. And it's kind of funny, in a brass band setup, the trombone and the euphonium and the conductor are all in a line.
Right.
So it's kind of like the line of Jameson men there. It's interesting, yeah.
Now, the euphonium as a solo instrument is, I understand, much more valued over in the UK than it is here, right? There's a much richer lineage and heritage as far as brass band music.
Yeah. In the brass band heritage, it's really, the euphonium is really a solo instrument, completely respected as a solo instrument. And it's not necessarily like that here with the wind band heritage.
Is there a style of playing? I mean, in particular, the euphonium, is it different in the UK than it is here?
Yeah, I would say it's much different in terms of, I guess, the amount of vibrato that they use. They use much more of a singer's vibrato over there.
Yeah.
And really the size of the sound really fits to the brass band, where the euphonium is a lead voice. Mm-hmm. And here it's in the wind band, it is not really considered a lead voice. It's more of a accompanying role.
We'll probably get a lot of hate mail from American euphonium players, but no, I understand. You know, it's actually a good thing. Luckily for you, you're going to be escaping the States and actually going to study in the UK.
Yeah.
You're excited about that. Where are you going to be studying?
Yeah, I'm going to be studying at the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama, which is in Cardiff, Wales.
So get great training and a great accent too. That would be nice. You also have a further vision for your direction after college.
Yeah. I really want to take the euphonium to places where it has really never been before. But I want to really expand what the euphonium is capable of doing and expand the repertoire. And actually, I kind of started expanding the repertoire on my own a little bit. There's a guy named Ben Tubb who is actually writing a concerto for me right now.
That's one way of extending the tradition is making your own tradition. And I heard that sort of modern, you know, sort of multiphonics that you put in there, the cadenza. So really trailblazing stuff and just a beautiful sound there, Grant.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Grant Jameson, 17 years old, our euphonium player from Dublin, Ohio. Now it's time to hear two local Pittsburgh kids in a row. First up, from the Pittsburgh suburb of Sewickley, we have the 14-year-old pianist Sasha Voynov. Please welcome him. Sasha, you've brought one of Chopin's best-loved pieces. Tell everyone what it'll be.
I'll be playing Chopin's Polonaise in A-flat major, opus 53.
Thank you.
14-year-old Sasha Voino from Sewickley, Pennsylvania, just outside of Pittsburgh on the Ohio River, played the heroic polonaise in A-flat, Opus 53, by Frederic Chopin. Gosh, Sasha, one of my favorite pieces, and you just nailed it in this beautiful room. Just great hearing you play that. Chopin was, I think we can agree, one of the great virtuoso pianists of all time, but compared to his contemporary Franz Liszt, who was really the showman of the era, Chopin didn't spend that much time on the concert stage compared to Franz Liszt. And I understand you're interested in being more on the Liszt side of things, the outward, you know, the performer, the person who really connects with the audience. You actually compose and arrange in order to perform your own music in concert, yes?
That's right. Ever since I was six and I wrote my first composition, I've been arranging pieces and writing my own original music to bring to the audience, because really, it's all about the audience, to entertain them, right?
That sounds good, yeah. I really like that. And your arrangements are flashy and quite famous around town here. You've played your arrangements several times with the Pittsburgh Pops, right? What did you play with them?
Last year, I arranged the popular holiday song Frosty the Snowman, and I got to play that with the Heinz Hall Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra, so mm-hmm. Yeah. That was definitely fun.
What did you bring into that? A little bit of jazz, or what kinds of things did you do?
I think I did a little bit of a jazz blues kind of entrance, then nice. Kind of the cacciatorian style, and then a bit of waltz, and then finally I ended it with a great boogie.
Very nice. Sasha, as a budding pianist entertainer, we thought we'd give you a quiz about the other illustrious members of your club, the great piano showmen of history. Ah, yes, the unmistakable Liberace at the end there. I caught that. Always travel with your own women's chorus, Sasha. I think that's a good plan. You ready to do our little quiz here?
Sure.
Very good. Take it away, Joanne.
Okay. This is an eyewitness account of a certain piano showman's virtuosic improvisation at a party in Vienna. The man's soul passes over his countenance. The muscles of the face swell and its veins start out. The wild eyes double wildly, the mouth quivers, and he looks like a wizard overpowered by the demons he himself has called up. Is the improviser A, Robert Schumann, B, Ludwig von Beethoven, or C, Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky?
You know, Beethoven was always crazy, and it sounded like that was a lot of craziness, so I'm going to have to say B.
B, Beethoven it is, absolutely, right, right. Although we know him as a great composer, we don't equate him necessarily with showmanship per se. He was famous in his 20s for the fantastic improvisations he would perform in the aristocratic homes of Vienna. Because of their huge shifts in mood and sometimes hour-long length, it seems that Beethoven was working out ideas for his great symphonies to come right there in that improvisation. Next question, Joanne.
Okay. Franz Liszt was the greatest piano showman of all time. In fact, during his life, the term Listomania was coined to describe the hysterical reaction to his concerts. Which of the following is true? A, women tore his handkerchiefs and gloves to shreds. B, women wore his broken piano strings as bracelets. C, women wore his old stinky cigar butts around their necks. Or D, all of the above.
Well, this one's quite interesting. Let's say B, the strings around the...
You like the piano strings thing? What if I were to tell you that the answer was D, all of the above. Absolutely. According to one account at the time, an infatuated lady picked up his cigar stump, quote, out of the gutter, had it encased in a locket, and surrounded it with the monogram FL in diamonds. She then went about her courtly duties unaware of the sickly odor it gave forth. We should all be so admired. Joanne?
In response to a British reviewer who described his music as the biggest sentimental vomit of all time, piano showman Liberace said, A, but did he mention my outfit? B, the problem with the British is you never know what they really think. Or C, I cried all the way to the bank.
C.
C, yes, I cried all the way to the bank. It's Liberace. Yes, indeed. In 1955, Liberace was America's highest paid entertainer, Michael Jackson of his time. Sasha, after all of that, we must experience your own showmanship. What will you play for us now to show us?
Here's a little arrangement that I did on a theme of Paganini, and I thought it would be really cool to have the theme sound like Paganini's making a lot of mistakes on it. So here are the mistakes on the theme of Paganini.
Very good. Sasha Voronoff, 14 years old, from nearby Sewickley, Pennsylvania.
The audition video Sasha sent us is incredibly entertaining and has him performing many of his arrangements for piano. We've got that posted for you at fromthetop.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Our second young performer from Pittsburgh is with me now on stage. He's a 17-year-old violist, and his name is Daniel Orson. Daniel, tell everyone what you and I are going to play.
We are going to play the fourth movement Vivace from the Brahms Viola Sonata in F minor.
Thank you. We heard the finale from Brahms' Sonata in F Minor for viola and piano. Our violist was Daniel Orson, 17 years old, from here in Pittsburgh. Daniel, that had such a beatific quality about it, such an exuberance, appropriate that we end an F minor sonata in F major. But you come by beatitude somewhat naturally. You're a guy who's in church every Sunday. Why is that?
Both of my parents are pastors. So there's no way I'm missing church.
That's right. But in fact, though, religion is a big part of your life on your own. And it's exposed you to another side of Pittsburgh.
Right. Well, with my parents' work, I've done stuff with homeless shelters and helping refugees and things. And it's really helped expose me to what life is like for poor people. Usually the media focuses on the rich and the famous, and people only tend to look up from where they are and rarely look down. And the work I've done there has really helped broaden my worldview.
Excellent, excellent work that you do. Aside from an unassailable Christian attitude towards your fellow human being, aside from church, you also have strong beliefs about environmentalism. What's one of the major changes you'd like to see in policy regards the environment?
The thing I'd most like to see are a set of pollution taxes.
You actually wrote a 5-page letter to the president and some senators about that, yes?
Yes.
And you shared your letter with us, and I have to say, I was really impressed. Would you mind reading a short excerpt for us?
Sure. We need to use the free market to our advantage. Markets are powerful forces, like gravity. Engineers try to use gravity to their advantage all the time. Environmentalists should do likewise with the free market. The free market and the incentives for innovation and cost saving it provides are going to be the only way to develop green technologies that will be affordable enough for poor countries and to get America off its addiction to fossil fuels.
Excellently done. Measured and passionate and eloquent writing, much like your viola playing. It was a pleasure doing the Brahms with you, Daniel, and best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Daniel Orson, 17 years old, our violist from right here in Pittsburgh.
As we say at the top of every episode, From the Top celebrates the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. But did you know that our radio show is just one of the many ways From the Top does that? Learn about our outreach efforts at fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from U.S. Trust, believing that the arts have a worth all their own in stimulating the hearts and imaginations of our country's best young musicians. From the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need, on the web at rwjf.org. And from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. This week, we're coming to you from Carnegie Music Hall in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Coming up, the Bartok Second Rhapsody, performed by a 16-year-old violinist from Illinois. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory.
where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. Today's show in Pittsburgh is made possible by Carnegie Mellon University School of Music, celebrating its 100th anniversary this year, and with support from classical WQED-FM 89.3. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. As part of our regular series, Recognizing Innovators in the Field of Music Education, we want to do a shout-out to a woman here in our audience with over 40 years of teaching under her belt. This amazing educator has taught kids from preschool to high school in public schools. Here at Carnegie Mellon, she's helped train the next generation of teachers. She's chaired the Urban Leadership Conference and served on multiple national boards, and now she leads Pittsburgh's Urban Music Project, which provides musical instruments, teacher training, and concert opportunities to over 37 public schools. Please welcome Natalie Ozeas. Natalie, it's nice to be able to recognize your great work. What's your take on the current state of music education in Pittsburgh's public schools?
I'm deeply concerned about cuts to education in general, and specifically to cuts in the arts. And I'm very concerned about the bright, talented young teachers who are in the classrooms with great enthusiasm and great energy. And I fear for their jobs.
40 years and still fighting the good fight. If you want to learn more about Natalie and what she's doing here in Pittsburgh, you can go to our map of America at fromthetop.org. Natalie, will you please introduce our next guests?
Ladies and gentlemen, from the Philadelphia area, the teenage members of the Temple University Music Preparatory Division Honors String Quartet. They'll perform the opening movement of one of the pinnacles of chamber music, written when the composer was contemplating his own impending death. This is from Schubert's String Quartet No. 14 in D minor, known as Death and the Maiden.
You heard the first movement of Schubert's String Quartet No. 14 in D minor, Death and the Maiden, played by the Temple University Music Preparatory Division Honors String Quartet. Amy Sims, 16, from Broomall, Pennsylvania, and Brendan Zapp, 14, from Ocean, New Jersey, violins. Tiffany Lariah, 17 years old, our violist from Sewell, New Jersey, and Ben Park, 15, from Haverford, Pennsylvania, cello. Their coach is Charles Parker. Nicely done, you guys. Really enjoyed that very, very much. Let's talk about the difficulty that all teenage musicians of your caliber have to face. How to do well in school while training intensively in music. Each of you is coping with that slightly differently. Ben, for instance, you're attending public high school while focusing on music outside of school. But you're taking, it's a full schedule you're doing in high school, yes?
Yeah, over the years, I've had to manage my time really well and learn to prioritize everything I do. So I've had to break down like my schedule over the past couple of weeks and kind of pick out the most important parts I would have to practice throughout the day. But it's been a huge challenge for me since I'm a freshman in high school now, so it's a whole different. So everyone who's going through the same thing as I am, I totally understand what it is, but I think the only thing you can do is persevere, and after that, it's college, and do that some more.
I'm depressed just thinking about it. It's really great. Brendan, you're homeschooled. Is that because of your concentration on music?
Yeah, it was a really hard decision for me to make, but I knew it was the right one because I've always really been into music.
And Tiffany, you've invented a kind of school music hybrid. How do you arrange your day?
Well, normally in a public school day, there's like 8 periods. But this year, I'm only taking 4 periods out of 8. And it's because I'm like preparing for college auditions, and like I felt like this year like it needed to be done because it was just so hard to manage so much homework and practicing to get the level that I wanted to be. So I talked to the school, and I had to show them, you know, proof of what I was going to be spending my time doing, show them that I was really involved in my music and really dedicated. But after I showed them, they were really flexible, and it really helped me out.
Yeah, but you had to convince them that what you were doing was worthwhile.
Yeah, it was a little tough, but
obviously all doing very, very well. Teenage string quartets, I mean, you haven't spent an enormous amount of time playing together, but you haven't only put together a first-rate performance. You actually have a common interest. You're all way into sports. I mean, Ben, last time you were on the program, it was all about soccer for you, but what about now?
Well, I'm really into basketball, and my hometown is Chicago, so the Bulls are nice. And my favorite player is Derrick Rose, but my love for basketball also kind of interfered with playing cello as well, because I also play basketball a lot, and I've gotten injured so many times right before concerts. So I've been playing in splints and just all kinds of stuff for concerts, and it's been awful, but I've never not been able to play in a concert, so it's all good.
Play through the pain there, yeah. Ben. That's really great. Amy, I don't think we've ever had a string quartet on this show that likes to argue about football.
Yes, well, my whole family is from Pittsburgh, so I'm a Steelers fan. And Brendan's family is from San Diego, so he's a Chargers fan. And Ben is from Chicago, so he's a Bears fan and a bit of a Tebow fan. So that in of itself is an argument. So.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of love for Tebow here in Pittsburgh, Ben. You have anything to say about this?
Well, I don't want to praise him too much in Pittsburgh right now, but I just want to say that I really admire what he's done for the NFL and just his will to win, and I just really like that, but that's as far as I'll go.
Brendan, are you a Tebow fan?
You crazy? As Amy said, I'm a Chargers fan. I hate the Broncos.
So I'm sitting here listening to you all talk about and arguing about football, and I'm thinking, wouldn't the world be a better place if the opposite happened? I mean, if football players argued about string quartets?
What you talking about? There's no freaking way that the Emerson Quartet is better than the Guarneri was at its prime.
Yo, you kidding me, right? The Emerson rehearses the Beethoven Opus 59 quartets way better than the Guarneri ever played them.
Dude, dude, the Emerson is a bunch of sissies. I'd like to see Eugene Drucker try to take on Arnold Steinhardt in the box, Chacon. You know, mano a mano.
Bring it on, buddy.
Music to my ears. Great, Schubert, you guys, and great hanging out with you, and all the best to all of you. Thanks for being with us. The Temple University Music Preparatory Division honors string quartet Amy Sims, Brendan Zach, Tiffany Lariah, and Bin Park.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.org. Over the last 5 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded well over $1 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Chris.
Our final performer is the 2011 winner of the Blunt Slauson Young Artist Competition in Montgomery, Alabama, and a student of Cyrus Faroe, who teaches right here at Carnegie Mellon. She's a 16-year-old violinist from Buffalo Grove, Illinois, and her name is Kelly Talim. Kelly, welcome. I want to talk a little bit about family. You have an especially close relationship with your older brother. Is he a musician? Tell us about him.
Yeah, I have a wonderful relationship with my older brother, Kai, who's a pianist studying piano performance at the Eastman School of Music. He's a freshman right now, but in many ways, he's a mentor to me. He's 3 years older than me, but he teaches me a lot of things. One thing I learned from him was this past summer when he went off to college, he took all his piano music with him, and it was the first time I saw the piano completely clean. And I saw what was behind all that piano music was a yellow sticky note, and it said, be humble, and it had a smiley face on it, and it really reminded me that I have to be a person before I can be a musician.
Wow, constant reminder on the piano like that. That's great. It actually reminds me, Billy Joel was in conversation with Groucho Marx, and, you know, was pumping him for information about, you know, what the most important thing to remember about life and show business. And Groucho just simply told him, never forget to say thank you. So another way of saying be humble. Nice advice. I guess you get mad at your parents a little bit for meddling in your music. Do you ask them for advice? They're not musicians themselves, your parents, right?
No.
So what do? Do you play for them? And
Sometimes I have bad days when I'm really, like, mad or something. But I'll still ask them for advice. I'll play for them, and I'll ask for their opinion on my music. But being mad, I don't appreciate what they say. Even if they say good job, I'll just be mad. But then after I'm over my anger or whatever, I always remember what my brother used to say to me is that we always need to always listen to the words of our audiences, even if we're having a bad day, because they're the ones we're going to be playing for the rest of our lives.
That's right. Very good advice, again, from your older brother. We've got a great piece to play. Let's make it in honor of your family, all right? Would you please introduce the piece we're going to play?
We'll be playing Béla Bartók's Second Rhapsody.
A really great piece to end our show today. I want to thank all of our wonderful performers, and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And Kelly, we can take this from the top. Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Bagley and Tim Banker, with music producer Tom Vinieri. The tour producer is David Balsam. The assistant music producer is Caroline Cardios-Menos, and the production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette, with David Forbes and John Servies. Post-production by Tom Bagley. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our founding partners are New England Conservatory and WGBH Boston. To download an application to appear on our program, visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at gatesfoundation.org. From the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.
Thanks for downloading this week's From the Top podcast. If you liked what you heard, head over to our website, fromthetop.org, where you can listen to every show in its entirety. I'm Christopher O'Reilly. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again next week.